everyone, for getting on this call today. We'll probably have several more calls going over lots of different issues over the next several weeks leading up to the end of the notice and comment period. We want to begin with this because I think the legal underpinnings of this rulemaking are indeed a critical issue. There sometimes can be challenging issues to fully comprehend. We want to just lay them out there. Now, some have portrayed the fact that we are suggesting that the agency doesn't have legal authority to be doing what they're doing as somewhat cynical reversal of where we've been, because we've been talking about the flexibility that the agency has for quite some time, and we continue to believe that the agency has incredible flexibility to address some of the issues that have been raised with respect to the RFS, including adjusting volumes. It's how they do it that is really what's important, and we don't believe that the agency can invent authority to that it does not have by virtue of the statute. Now, they are relying here on the general waiver authority that it was given that sets up two tests for a waiver or a partial waiver of the RFS. The first test is whether or not there is severe economic harm. And in a situation that you have here, where ethanol is so much cheaper than gasoline today and is providing consumers with a less expensive fuel at the pump, that's just not a test that could be met. The second test, and not one that they are relying upon, the second test is one of adequate domestic supply. And it is their tortured reasoning for what is domestic supply that's at the heart of this issue. Certainly, there is more than enough supply of grain-based ethanol, and probably more than enough supply of other advanced biofuels as well. The one supply issue would be whether or not there are the commercial volumes of cellulosic ethanol, and the agency has appropriately used other authority to reduce the cellulosic number significantly, as it has every year that the RFS has been in place. But it is going beyond that authority here, we believe, and reading into a waiver provision that is clearly focused on production, focused on supply, and introducing consumption into this waiver authority, introducing the notion of a blend wall and the ability to distribute fuel as part of adequate domestic supply. That's where we think that EPA has dramatically overstepped their bounds, overstepped the statute, and is making a fundamental mistake, because in our view, the moment you introduce the ability to distribute fuel and the blend wall into the waiver process is the minute that you turn the RFS over to the oil companies, because they are the ones that get to determine then how much infrastructure is used, whether or not they want to provide the market access of our fuel to the consumer. And history has demonstrated time and time again that they'll do everything in their power to prevent that from happening. And so that is why the Congress specifically did not allow fuel infrastructure into the waiver process. I want to make clear, though, I'm not making news here today. This is a proposal. And as it's a proposal, there is no standing, there is no legal issue to litigate on. And we are hopeful that in the comment period, the agency evaluates this issue with a little bit more thought and ultimately modifies its proposal to not include the blend wall in the waiver process. If they do, we're going to evaluate our options from there. And we do think that the legal underpinnings of their existing rationale, their existing reasoning, is highly vulnerable to a legal challenge. But we're a long way from that. what we're trying to do today is to simply tee up for you folks what some of the issues are. And I've asked to join me on the call today somebody that some of you might know, because Jonathan Kappas has been in this space for a while. He is currently on the faculty at the University of Illinois as a clinical assistant professor of law and policy in the College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences in the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics. Previously, he was chief counsel at the Senate Ag Committee. He was the administrator of the Farm Service Agency at USDA. And a long time ago, he worked for Senator Ben Nelson, where he helped to shape the renewable fuel standard. He was there when the act was being crafted and passed, and Senator Nelson and certainly Jonathan himself had a pretty vital role in the development of that legislation, and can speak to what Congress was intending when they put these things together. So with that introduction, maybe Jonathan, if you could review for those on the call the legal issues that as you see them.
Yes. Well, thank you, Bob, for having me on the call today, and thanks to everybody for joining. I'll try to give a brief overview of some of this, and then I think the questions will help flesh out some of the issues even further. As you mentioned, the big issue here is, from a legal standpoint, is what Congress meant by the term inadequate domestic supply in the waiver provisions for the RFS, and whether EPA's argument for using the blend wall or the constraints on consumption constitutes inadequate domestic supply as Congress intended. And I think, just to reiterate, obviously there is no lawsuit. This is just a proposed rule and the chance to comment on it. So, you know, there's very much a level of speculative or very speculative nature to a lot of this. And so when the draft rule first leaked this fall, the question kept coming up in discussions, you know, can EPA do this? And so the post that I put together a couple weeks ago was based on the leaked draft, and it looked at just kind of the general concept of what EPA's authority is under the waiver provisions. And one of the things, Bob, that you mentioned, and certainly that we can get out of the way right off the bat, is the cellulosic side of this. The cellulosic waiver is very specific, and it says that any time the EPA estimates there's not enough cellulosic ethanol to meet the mandate requirements in the statute, they actually have to reduce the mandated numbers in the statute based on that estimate. So EPA is fully in the right and is going down within their authority for cellulosic. As a corollary to the cellulosic piece, EPA also has the very explicit authority in the statute to reduce the overall mandates based on the reduction in cellulosic. So once you reduce the cellulosic ethanol amount, EPA can then reduce the overall mandate and the advanced biofuel mandate to the same amount of the cellulosic reduction or less. So those parts are very clear. And as Bob, as you alluded to, the big question then becomes, what is an additional reduction in the RFS, the renewable fuel side of it, so the overarching, the top line number for the RFS? And EPA has gone further than the cellulosic reduction numbers and is proposing to reduce the overall number by more than that. Their justification, or the way they claim the authority to do that further reduction, then, as Bob mentioned, is in one of the two general waiver provisions, and one is the point about whether there's a threat of harm to the environment or the economy, which they've looked at before and have turned down waiver requests based on that. The second one is the one they're looking at, and it's general waiver authority, where EPA determines there's inadequate domestic supply. So looking at this from that perspective, you know, should this get into the courts? And frankly, sort of what would be some of the arguments and discussions to respond to the proposed rule, some of the comments, is how do you define inadequate domestic supply? Congress did not define any of the terms in the statute, so it becomes a question of statutory interpretation. EPA makes an argument in the proposed rule for that, and I'll get to that in a minute. And there are a whole host of what they call canons or basic rules and guidelines for interpreting statutes. And, you know, up front, I think one of the things that's always important to remember is that the court courts are generally very deferential to the agencies when they attempt to implement a statute, and if there's vague terms. Now, the agency does not have that kind of deference if they're clearly going against congressional intent or clearly going, going against the very words of the statute. So they can't just sort of make it up during the implementation process and claim the authority. So all that brings us back to what did Congress mean when it talked about inadequate domestic supply, and what are the things that should or would be considered either in this process, in comments and discussion about the EPA proposal, or should it ever get to that point, how would courts begin to look at it? And I think it's always a safe bet to say nobody can really predict how a court would look at it or what would come out. The best you can do is look at previous decisions and precedent. I think one of the first top-line issues is obviously this statute. Congress's intent with the statute was to increase the production of renewable fuels. So everything about the RFS was geared around increasing the amount of renewable fuel that has been produced, that is produced in this country, so that it can be blended into transportation fuel. And that then, you know, so it brings us back to, you know, the question of does the term inadequate domestic supply involve simply the aspect of can the industry produce the renewable fuel, or does EPA's argument that, well, inadequate domestic supply can also include what is in essence a demand or the ability to get the produced fuel into the consumer's hands through some of the practical restraints or issues, the hurdles that are involved with infrastructure and the fact that the bulk of our gasoline is blended at a 10% level. Again, you sort of sort through the very various ways that this gets interpreted, and a couple things jump out. A couple of court cases that I had looked at in the post a couple weeks ago had looked at some of the previous EPA decisions under this, and the one that was most interesting, the one that raised maybe the most interesting question, was the API case that was just recently came down, and it came down this fall from the D.C. Circuit. And in that, they talk about they're looking at the cellulosic side, and they actually overturned the EPA's estimate for cellulosic ethanol in 2012. And part of the reasoning the court used was that it focused on what it called an asymmetrical aspect of this. EPA was saying that they're overestimating cellulosic in 2012 to help drive the industry, but the court says, well, that's asymmetrical because, in fact, the industry that blends it has no control over or no ability to push the cellulosic industry to produce more. And so the court kind of made a point about it doesn't work that way if what you're doing is you're telling the industry to blend it, but there's nothing there for them to blend. So a question that comes up is the blend wall, which is something that's outside the control of the production industry, the ethanol and biofuel and renewable fuel production industry, has no control over the blend wall. Is that itself something that's asymmetrical? By using the blend wall then to change the RFS. And the fact that the burden for changes of the RFS fall on the exact industry that Congress was trying to increase production from. So you kind of start off with that aspect that it's going against the overall congressional intent. And by using the blend wall, which is not a production issue by the industry, does that kind of hit on this asymmetrical issue? In the proposed rule that EPA put out, they make a series of arguments about using the blend wall and using the idea of supply and what can be supplied to the ultimate consumer and a lot of the issues surrounding that. And one of the things that they look at, and this is one of the ways that courts will try to interpret statutory language, is to look at where Congress has also used that phrase. And one of the most interesting ones, and maybe the closest one, that really gets to this issue is also in the Clean Air Act, and it's just a few provisions up from the Renewable Fuel Standard provision, and this is the oxygenate. And in the oxygenate fuels, they actually provided waiver authority, and they provide waiver authority that uses the phrase inadequate domestic supply of or distribution capacity for oxygenated gasoline. And as we said in the RFS, they use the phrase inadequate domestic supply. And what Congress did in the oxygenate side of it was to go on and say that it really distinguishes between distribution capacity and that it must be considered separately from the domestic supply. They don't do that in the RFS. And so you go in through the various arguments of how you interpret the statute as to whether, obviously, Congress knew how to separate or make legislative language, you know, separate the supply side and the ability to blend or the ability to consider the distribution capacity. They did not. They specifically did not do that in the RFS. So that raises a question about EPA's interpretation as to whether they're going outside the boundaries that Congress gave them by including something, the blending capacity, the distribution capacity, into supply, when in fact in the same statute and just a few provisions up, Congress separated the two and said they're different and you consider them differently. So that raises a question, I think, potentially raises a big question about the EPA interpretation here. But at the end of the day, as we said, it's very much an interpretation issue, and there's going to be there's a lot of interesting aspects and I think you know, kind of a lot more that can be looked into on this. But that's sort of the overview. Again, it's very much at this point a question of what people think and how they position it. But EPA has made an argument that goes to the heart of this idea of statutory interpretation and their ability, their authority under the statute to interpret the words that Congress wrote. And again, at the end of the day, the things that I think you constantly think about that they're bumping up against in that discussion is that the entire intent of the statute was to increase production. And does this interpretation, this expansion or somewhat unique or novel way of interpreting the word domestic supply, how does that fit with the intent Congress had for the overall statute?